Hey there, Discerning Thoughtbot podcast listener. I just wanted to take a quick moment to ask for your feedback. There's so many cool things that we'd love to do with all the shows, and want to know how you feel about our sponsor reads and the possibility of starting a Patreon-style campaign to make them all possible. If you could head over to tbot.io/survey for a super short questionnaire, your input would be much appreciated. That link again is tbot.io/survey. And hey, thanks.
Giant robots smashing into other giant robots.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Giant Robots Smashing to Other Giant Robots podcast. I'm Ben, and I'm here with Derek, and we're going to be talking about products and tech and things like that.
Products and tech.
Yeah. How's your week going?
My week's going good. We are in the midst of preparing to onboard a few more new hires.
Okay.
So more people scaling things going on this week.
Mm-hmm.
Next week, we have a new support engineer and a new designer joining the team. So
that's cool. So what will that, how many people will that bring you up to?
I was actually just trying to tally it up, and it's kind of messy now because we have like given the Lead Pages team some of the responsibilities that used to live within core drip team, but there's going to be about 5 developers, a person working on educational content, person working on growth. We have like 4 support people. Most of those are kind of managed by the Lead Pages support team. They do a really good job of just onboarding and scaling up the support side of things.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, there's me and Rob, and I'm trying to think if I'm missing anybody. But yeah, it is kind of interesting because there's like the overlap, like marketing team, you know, the marketing design team at Lead Pages was the ones who redesigned the new drip marketing website. So, you know, those things that used to live in-house now are just kind of like taken over by their team. So
This might not be a question for you, but when you say growth, is that marketing as like, is that the same thing or is it not the same thing?
Yeah, it's basically marketing.
Okay.
So Zach, who's on our team, used to wear many different hats pre-acquisition. You know, he would work on pretty much anything that would help drive new trials into the product.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's kind of focusing in on managing our content. So he's managing the blog and pretty much anything that goes onto there.
Gotcha. So his responsibilities sort of end at the trial gets started.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
That's good to know. So we've been doing some talking, and we are looking for someone in marketing. We're hiring someone, I think, at least part-time for now.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like this is a classic developer thing where we're solid at the development and the design, but we put not enough effort into the marketing sales side of things.
Right.
And I was meeting with Chad, our CEO, the other day, and I was like, maybe we shouldn't be like the only company that doesn't do marketing and sales. You know, like maybe that's not where we should innovate, is by not doing those things.
Right.
So we've sort of done it not great. We've like outsourced it a couple times, worked with some outside companies, never to like much result. And it just felt like a thing that it was worth trying having someone in-house, at least part-time to start, to just see what happens there.
Yeah. So is this primarily for marketing the products that Thoughtbot offers?
Yes.
Like Upcase, FormKeep, those kinds of things?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So there's a portfolio of products at this point. So yeah, they're all fair game.
And who does like, you know, marketing on the consultancy side of the business? Is that someone in-house?
Yeah. So Dan Croak is our chief marketing officer. And
okay.
He spends a lot of time and effort on that.
Got it.
And so Dan would be great at the product stuff as well, but he has less time available because he does a little bit of consulting and then also stuff for the marketing for the consulting side of the business. So
rather than
try to ask him to take on a new thing and split his attention even more, this felt like a good change.
Yeah, cool.
So I'm curious, actually, if you have any advice on like how to look for this person or test this person or hire this person. I have some ideas of my own, but this is the first time I've needed to hire for, or one of the first times I've needed to hire for a role that's like so different than my own.
Yeah.
And so like one thought I had initially was looking for referrals. That's clearly a really good like place to start.
Mm-hmm.
And if I find someone that I think is really good, but we can't hire them, ask them to help us hire a person.
Mm-hmm.
Like basically, can we pay you some amount of money, some consulting fee to help us review candidates or help us like evaluate people?
Huh. That's an interesting idea. Yeah.
I stole it from Brian Cassell over at Bootstrap Web, which is a great podcast.
Sure. Yeah.
So that's one thought I had.
Yeah. I like that idea a lot. I mean, so in terms of like specifically hiring for that role, I don't, you know, I've never really taken on that kind of task of hiring for the, for a marketing type role. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I have like anecdotes about what we look for when we hire developers and those types of things. But yeah, I think that does sound like a really good idea. If it's not something that you have intimate knowledge about hiring for, then soliciting someone who does seems like an advisable thing to do.
Yeah. I don't even know what to call it, because it seems like all the, if you're like fresh and hip, you call it growth. And if you're old and stodgy, you call it marketing or something. I don't know. Like, I just don't know the world well enough. So I feel like even the language is like, can be a signal to people that know what's going on. And sure. I'm not even sure what to call it, honestly.
Yeah.
Even how to evaluate this person or to tell them like what part of the process they're responsible for. Mm-hmm. I was thinking like, what are the like the KPIs for a marketing person? And it sounds like for Drip, at least, it's increased a number of trials, I suppose.
Yeah, it's like it depends on what area of the funnel that you're looking for. Like basically for SaaS, we found like top of the funnel stuff is like the very first point to focus on. So if you can increase trials, then you can work on, you know, optimizing onboarding and then optimizing retention. So those are kind of like the stages of the funnel. And yep. It's good to have somebody focusing on the top of the funnel for sure. And then, you know, there's all kinds of different things you can bite off there. You can, you know, pursue content marketing, you can pursue paid acquisition. So, you know, there's a lot of different areas. Just to say like top of the funnel marketing, that's kind of a broad category.
Right.
But, you know, this person would probably, I'm imagining you would want them to pull together different resources, like maybe work on hiring writers or contracting out writing if content marketing is something that you're looking to do. Mm-hmm. And this person kind of just has the knowledge to know how to plan strategy and delegate those tasks.
Yeah.
So yeah,
that sounds ideal. I think we're at a point where we don't have a cohesive strategy. Mm-hmm. And so the kind of person we're looking for would be able to start like tell us the strategy from scratch.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what we're looking for.
Yeah. Has by and large the marketing just kind of been people who are familiar with ThoughtBot and kind of what ThoughtBot does, just gradually discover the products?
Basically, yes. For a while with at least like FormKeep, we were working with an outside company who was writing blog posts for us once a week. Mm-hmm. We didn't see a good ROI on that. I think they were like maybe just a little too general and like not technical enough for our audience or something, or maybe there's some other missing piece there in the promotion. Mm-hmm. Or I don't know. I'm not sure what happened, but we just didn't see good return from that. Mm-hmm. So it's mostly been like most of our people come from like someone wrote a blog post, mentions FormKeep. That's been good for us. Like Zapier has like a review of FormKeep that ranks fairly right. Well for certain search terms. And so that sends us a decent amount of traffic. And yeah, right. the ThoughtBot Association for sure contributes a good amount.
Right.
But there hasn't, no one has basically for more than, you know, a handful of weeks sat down and been like, all right, here's our current traffic. Here's what's working. What are we going to double down on? What are we going to not spend time on? What are some experiments mm-hmm. we can try? And there have been some small efforts in that way, but no one whose job it was for a long time.
Yeah, it makes sense.
And it feels that feels kind of silly to me. Like, shouldn't someone whose job that is clearly have a positive ROI on the business? Mm-hmm. Like, shouldn't putting money into that clearly turn into more money? And if not, like, what is going on? So it's like, if it feels like this should be the easiest decision to make, is to like at least run experiments there, at least try somebody.
Yeah. Probably I would imagine for the next stage of growth for a lot of the products, more features are not necessarily needed. It's kind of like, I'm figuring that you're ahead on development and maybe a little bit behind on the marketing side.
For sure.
Which we've found that in different points in time through Drip's history, like we would be spending, you know, a good chunk of months building out new functionality. And then we'd realize like, we haven't capitalized on all the things we've built in the last month just because we've been focused so heads down on adding new functionality. And then it's like, you know, we kind of have to refocus and let marketing catch up with development. So yeah, it's like always this balance, you know.
Totally. Our company is full of designers and developers. So it's like the moment we need code written or like a new landing page, like that's like a pretty easy thing to get done.
Right.
But so our blind spot is in those other parts of growing a company. And I watched a great video. Did I mention this last week maybe? By Greg Pollack. From Code School.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so.
Cool. So Greg Pollack was the founder of Code School. Mm-hmm. And Envy Labs, and he did a really nice video series, like a four 1 hour videos, and one of the videos is like his story of Code School from start to acquisition. Mm-hmm. with and it was very interesting, and so I watched that, and one of the things he took away from that experience was, so he had the sort of the same thing where he's, you know, I'm a developer, all we have to do is, you know, write code and make a good product and then people will come buy it. And somewhere towards the end of the video, his takeaway was, actually, we should have about half the people doing development and half the people doing marketing. We should split our time roughly 50-50. And we're more like 99-1. So it's time to try some changes.
Yeah, seems like a good move.
Yeah, overall. And this feels like a blind spot in my skill set as well. Like, if you give me a product and I want to make it grow, I know how to do certain things from a product management standpoint. And I think I'm pretty good at evaluating things like pricing and features and what needs to be built and all that. But I have a big blind spot in the top of the funnel stuff.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, is that something that you are interested in increasing your skill set on? Or do you feel like right now, timing-wise, it's better to just bring on someone from the outside to take it on?
Yeah, it's a good question. It does sort of appeal to me just in terms of like making my toolbox bigger. Although I will say, like, so far I found I am happiest in like a product management type role, because it's a mix of talking to customers, figuring out what to do next, writing some code, getting into flow state from time to time is probably like what makes me happiest so far. I do enjoy things like writing blog posts and, you know, poring over analytics and things like that, but I haven't found it quite as fulfilling as the other work. And so I would love to improve those skills by learning them from someone that knows what's up, as opposed to sort of starting from scratch with myself and trying to build that, I think.
Sure.
That's worked for everything else in my career. Like, nothing is quite as fast as learning from someone that knows it already and working with them. So, like, I wouldn't mind being, like, a part-time apprentice if we hire someone that's really solid in this way.
Yep.
But I think my eventual happy place still has code and product management in it.
Yeah. I think I'm probably the same way. Like, I've thought about, like, down the line in my career, if I build more products, am I going to be pretty far removed from actually building the product? You know, am I going to hire developers to kind of do that side of it so I can focus on the growth and marketing and all that kind of stuff? And it sounds like that's ideal. Like, a lot of people make that transition from being the developer who just is doing all the code and then stepping away from the code so they can focus on growing the business.
Right. That was Rob, right, with you.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Rob hasn't written any code for Drip. And that was deliberate. We chose a tech stack that he didn't know just so that he wouldn't be tempted.
I remember him saying that.
So, I mean, I've watched, you know, that's what his trajectory has been. And I think I would still have to mentally get to the place where I can fill the same amount of wins from implementing a really killer marketing strategy or something like that. You know, it's still for me hard to think of those types of tasks the same way I think of knocking out a development task, you know, actually solving a problem for a customer by building a feature. So I think Rob has gotten there for sure, and probably many others, but I think it's a hard mental leap to make.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure that out myself, like what is most fulfilling to me, as opposed to like some arbitrary goal, like, oh, well, now that I've done this, I should move into this sort of role.
Right.
So. We'll see.
Yeah.
So along those lines, so we're looking for a marketing person, and we also have realized we've never tried any like direct outreach sales efforts for our products. And so that actually has spent much of this week doing that for Hound. So I've been reaching out to different Ruby consultancies that look sort of like us and talking to them about, you know, how are you dealing with style things? Do you find yourself arguing about style violations in PRs? Things like that, and kind of starting that like an outboundy, hey, are you interested in the solution kind of process? And you know, it's mixed. It's not my favorite thing, I'm realizing very quickly. It's like getting back to that whole like, where am I happiest? I'm trying to think of it as an experiment where it's like, let me try this for a little bit. Let me see if it seems like there's going to be an ROI here, and then if so, we can hire somebody else and say, we actually have a process that works.
Right.
But I'm that will not be my permanent job for sure.
Yeah. Seems like maybe your pricing changes have made it a little bit more feasible to do that kind of thing. I would imagine at the, what was it before? Was it $12 a month?
Yeah. Flat? Yeah. Per repo. Yeah.
Seems like that could be harder to justify, you know, a kind of an outbound sales strategy.
For sure.
Just from a cost perspective.
Yeah, exactly. And even at the new price points, it's questionable. We have some customers who have been with us. So like if we like sort our customer list by like LTV, there are people in there for whom it would make sense if we could get more accounts like that, that I think we can do outbound sales profitably. But we'll see. I'm curious at the new price points and whether or not there's even, it's a viable strategy for us. What else have you been up to?
Well, we shipped some stuff.
Nice.
Some more infrastructure-y type things. Mm-hmm. This was a task that was spearheaded by our new back-end scaling engineer. Uh-huh. And something we've been wanting to do for a long time, which was put our JavaScript snippet, you know, the snippet of JavaScript everyone and all Drip customers install on their website. Mm-hmm. We wanted to put that into S3 and put a CDN in front of it. Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of like a lower risk way to serve it and also more performant because the CDN can, you know, make sure that globally the time to serve the tag is pretty consistent and pretty fast. So it's one of those things like, you know, dealing with cache invalidation was the probably the riskiest part of this whole thing, like wanting to make sure that if someone updates their configuration, that JavaScript file needs to be served, the fresh copy of the file needs to be served within 5 minutes of making that change. Mm. And we just had to get to the point where we felt confident enough that it would actually work that way. So did a ton of testing on it, and we deployed that a couple days ago, and seems to be working well. So
nice.
Yeah, feels good to eliminate any remaining single points of failure we had in our infrastructure, and I think this was kind of the last biggest one.
Nice. Yeah. How has that been technically running a product where you have to drop a snippet on people's pages? That's sort of like I've had some ideas, product ideas recently that would require that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wary of it. I'm curious what you thought of that.
It's been pretty smooth. So we started out, the first version of it was a static snippet. So everybody who installed it got the same piece of JavaScript served onto their website.
Mm-hmm.
But we had enough foresight to make sure that everybody's snippet URL was unique. So it had their account ID embedded into it.
Mm-hmm.
And that way that allowed us to kind of go to phase two, which was pre-compile the stock JavaScript library that's needed to run and also their specific configuration data so that the snippet didn't have to call home for that configuration every single time the snippet was loaded.
Mm-hmm.
And that we did that maybe 2 years ago because we got to the point where, you know, there was just a ton of load on our Rails app from this snippet being served every single page load. So, you know, we put it on its own subdomain and we made sure that the account ID was embedded in the URL so that we could serve up unique files and cache things and pre-compile things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been pretty smooth, actually. I mean, we get many thousand requests back to our front-end servers from these with visitor data. So I think it depends on how much data you're looking to send back.
Mm.
If you were doing something that needed to track every single page load, then you would need, obviously, a huge database and a lot of capacity because that could potentially be a ton of requests.
Mm-hmm.
With Drip, we only send back upon first visit so that we can capture the original referrer and, you know, different details like their IP address and user agent and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just cookie them and we don't keep pinging back to our servers on every single page load. So.
Hmm. And have you found any like weird interactions between like other JavaScript on the page and your stuff?
Not really. I think it's been pretty smooth in that regard. Probably the biggest challenge has been the fact that we're embedding HTML and CSS on people's websites.
Yeah.
You know, style conflicts and Z-index fighting and stuff like that, you know, has been challenging. But now it's pretty resilient, like it's pretty battle tested.
Right.
So we'll occasionally hear of a small bug that affects like one person. And as far as we know, it doesn't affect anyone else. And then we just go in and fix it. So it's hard to nail it right out of the gate. But
that's interesting.
Kind of build up.
The CSS is the hard part.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you just slap a whole bunch of important on there and...
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, it's like we
pretty
win.
Much as you'd expect. Yeah, namespace everything. Mm-hmm. We still had some classes, like we had a close class on a close button.
Yeah,
and we like realized that was like interfering with Bootstrap websites or something. So then we had to like, you know, slap a namespace on all your classes. Mm-hmm. Importance. Yeah, there's a really good book that we checked out from Discuss, makers of Discuss, all about like how to embed HTML and CSS into people's websites.
That sounds useful.
So it's a good one to check out. Maybe we can link it up.
Yeah, that'd be great. Okay. All right. That's heartening. It sounds like it wasn't too awful.
No, it wasn't too awful.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
So the other day I went to, speaking of websites, I went to, there's this tiny, tiny yoga studio in my neighborhood and they have a website such as it is. And I wanted to check out the class schedule. And so I go to the website. And like clearly that's got to be like the 90% case for people going to a yoga studio's website, right? It's like, when are the classes?
Right.
And I click on the like, check our schedule thing. And it takes me to like a page not found. And I was like, what? And so I found another link on the page that was like, view our schedule. And it took me to an external website that also was like, now log in. And I was like, what is going on? And so I emailed them and I was like, hi, so both links to the schedule on your website don't work. And they respond back like, no, they work. And I was like, and so I went back and just double checked. I was like, no, they definitely don't work. And so I recorded a screencast, or like a little GIF actually, of like, I click this thing, it doesn't work. I click that thing, it doesn't work. And then I finally found like a third place. And if I like click there, like I get a schedule. Mm-hmm. And I sent that to, and so I, like, I showed them like, you know, it doesn't work. And then they respond back and see, they say, I see at the end there, you found our schedule. Everything's working great. Let me know if you need anything. And I was like, but you've like a giant, all right. And I just, at that point I had to give up.
Oh my goodness. That is how not to build a website.
Yeah, for sure. It's easy to forget with like the less tech savvy people, how they like, they just, I don't understand how they could watch that and be like, yep, that's fine.
Right.
It's like, as long as you can find it somewhere, that is good enough.
Yeah.
Namaste.
Not very Zen yoga like.
Yeah, I guess. So, I mean, this is like a yoga studio in someone's front living room kind of thing. Like, it's tiny. Mm-hmm. It holds like 12 people. So I kind of get that they're not tech savvy.
Sure.
But I was like, I think I'm at my limit for free tech support for random strangers.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, geez.
Yeah. So I had a question I wanted to ask you about.
Yeah, sure.
So you sold a company recently.
Mm-hmm.
I assume, not to get too personal, that you took some sort of cash off the table as part of this deal.
Mm-hmm.
Have you found that changed your motivation, daily happiness, any of that stuff?
That's a good question. I don't think it's had a very material impact, which is kind of what you would expect. You know, like they say, money doesn't buy happiness, and it doesn't. At the end of the day, like, what still makes me happiest is shipping features, making customers happy,
yep.
All those things. And so, yeah, I think financial security is always good to have. So I think you get to a basic level of like, I have X dollars in the bank account. I know that if catastrophe happened and, you know, I couldn't have an income for a certain number of months, I would be just fine.
Mm-hmm.
And that brings a certain level of comfort, I think. Mm-hmm. And it eliminates one more thing that you might stress about.
Mm-hmm.
And then beyond that, it's like, it's still super important to be fulfilled in what you're doing day to day.
Yeah.
I think it's a reminder that, like, I know for myself, I can't picture what retiring would look like for me, you know, like, and I'm not saying I would be able to retire right now. I wouldn't, but just the thought of like, all right, I've made it. I have all the money I need and now I can not work anymore. Like,
right.
You know, you get so much gratification from doing good work that
totally.
I think it's important to still have goals and to still be doing fulfilling work.
I feel like that seems to be true for everyone, as far as I can tell. Like, I'm not aware of a counterexample of someone who was like, now I have enough money, I will rejoice in idleness now.
Yeah.
And that will fill my days and that's all I want.
Like, right.
I feel like no one holds that view. But I also feel like that dream is somehow seductive anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's something about that where I think people, maybe it's, I'm not sure what it is, but that feels like a dream that gets sold to people. It's like, oh, once you, like, if you hit it big, or like you had this big sale, or once you finally have accumulated enough money, then there's this time of leisure that is all pure pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when it's good.
Yeah. I think it's a myth that a lot of people, you know, it's easy to go there in your head and think that that's some kind of ideal scenario to be in. I had a close family friend and advisor, you know, kind of giving me advice towards the end of the drip sale, basically saying, like, reminding me to make sure that I have future goals around what I want to do, because here, like, everything I've been pouring my life into for the last, you know, couple of years is now soon going to be no longer my thing. You know, I still get to work on it, but it's not my thing anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, this person had seen quite a bit of just depression and or just feeling of loss and some of these negative things that you don't expect are going to happen. But like, yeah, when you no longer own this thing, and now it's like, what do I have left?
Right.
And, you know, money doesn't necessarily ease that at all.
Yeah.
So
have you felt any of that sense of loss?
I mean, it's definitely a mental shift to think of drip as something that is no longer, you know, that I no longer have ownership in. But I think it helps still being able to work on the product and see it, you know, rising to new heights and mm-hmm. and growing. And I think that's the biggest thing. I mean, it would be pretty devastating to see, like, if this whole acquisition had gone sideways and the company that bought us, like, end up shutting it down or something. That would have been really hard to see. So I think it helps to see the product continuing to do well and knowing that the people who own it now want to see it do well as badly as I do.
Right. And you still have a hand. You still are contributing to it.
Yeah.
You're not exactly. like watching someone else deal with it.
Right. Hmm. Yep.
Interesting. So many psychological issues around life.
Yeah, for sure.
Are there's such a thing as like professional therapy, basically, right? Like yeah. therapists for your job, more or less.
Mm-hmm. I think even Rob's wife, Sherry, she's a psychologist.
That's right.
She does the Zen Founder podcast with Rob. And I think she's has begun doing some founder therapy and consulting work.
Yep.
Because I think there's a lot, especially among founders, it's kind of a wild ride sometimes.
Sure, so
there's
totally.
There's a lot of things, you know, balancing work and life and figuring out how to buffer the ups and downs.
Yeah. I would say even in my position, which is less precarious, mm-hmm. so much of my struggles are mostly like internal mental things.
Yeah.
It's rare. It's almost never like, oh, I don't have like the skills or the whatever. It's more about like where my brain is at and mm-hmm. what's feeling fulfilling and what's not and mm-hmm. and all that.
Yeah, along those lines, so something else that Rob and I were working on this week, kind of in preparation for bringing on these new hires, was we were taking a close look at all the issues that we have filed right now in the system and who they were assigned to. And, you know, we realized that things were kind of getting out of hand. Like looking at any given person, I had like 70 issues assigned to me, and many of them had been in there for a long time and just kind of, you know, sank to the bottom of the list. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I think just having those in there is definitely mental overhead.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what we're trying to combat actively right now is making sure that the burden of maintenance tasks doesn't outweigh the really good features that we want to get shipped. Because mm-hmm. it could be easy to just spin your wheels and work all day long on optimizing things, on upgrading dependencies, on fixing minor bugs, you know, mm-hmm. polishing UX, and you could have a whole team spending just months on those types of tasks without shipping any new features.
Yep.
So it was actually kind of a therapeutic activity for me, I think, to go through and like figure out, you know, if something's been in there for 2 years and it's a request that no one else has requested since then just close it out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if it's something that we should probably build, but we don't have immediate plans to do it, and we don't know if I'm really the best person to build that, then remove it from my queue, like unassign me and just put it back in the bucket of unassigned issues that may at some point get done.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we knocked my queue down from like 70 issues to 15.
Nice.
And awesome. That feels really good. Like it brings clarity to what we're working on. So we're also working on doing that for everyone else on the team and just making sure everyone's got a short focused list of things to work on.
I love it. I thought about making a project management tool that just auto deletes stuff if there hasn't been enough activity on them for very long.
Yeah.
It's like, we'll just do this for you. Trust us. It's fine.
Right.
It's like if it's sat there, like we use Trello for a lot of things like this pretty often. And so they have like, there's like a feature that you can use called card aging,
uh-huh.
which is nice because you can visually see like this card has not been moved or updated or anything or assigned to anybody in a long time. And so it looks old.
Yep.
And I like that add-on, but I want to take it one more step, which is like, don't even just make it look old. Just get rid of it. Let's just understand that like, this is not important. You've proven it's not important by not working on it.
Right. I've seen that on, isn't that like on the Rails project and things like that? You see issues that there's like a bot that's responding to issues and saying like, if this has not been touched for X days, then either like label it with something and then a few weeks later it'll close it. I think I've seen such bots exist for open source projects.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I was not aware of that, but I could see why you would do that for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in Rails with such a high volume of tickets and such.
Right. Right.
But I might need this for my life. I do that anyway with my like own task system. Like mm-hmm. I have reviews built in, like I use the weekly review kind of thing. And so mm-hmm. there are times where it's just like, this has just been on here too long. It's just not a now thing. I'm just going to dump it.
Yeah.
I think there's a certain fear in just like letting a program do it for you, but
mm-hmm.
it might be healthy.
I think so. Like things, if they're really important, should resurface, mm-hmm. you know?
Exactly.
I've even found like we often file issues from like random errors we see in Honey Badger, our error monitoring system.
Mm-hmm.
And like sometimes a developer won't get around to it for a few weeks. And then by the time we look at it, like it has been garbage collected by Honey Badger. Like, it's no longer visible because it hasn't happened again. So then we're like, well, guess we'll close that one out.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. So I forgot to ask you on the other episode, how was the camping trip?
Oh, camping was, it was a mix. It was really good from a, the gear all worked out beautifully.
Okay.
Hammock camping is amazing. Like, I slept so well in the hammock. I didn't need a pillow. I set it up in the afternoon and, like, laid in it for a minute to try it out, and I fell asleep into a nap, like, almost immediately. And I was like, that's nice. A good sign. And then over the night, it was also wonderful. It was the best I've slept outside, I would say.
Nice.
It's just, like, so comfortable. So all the gear worked out great. The problem was I was kind of hoping for peace and quiet, and instead what I got was, like, crazy car campers all around me. And so there's, in particular, there was this one woman that, like, around, like, midnight went insane, I guess, somehow, like, was, like, really drunk and started, was, like, screaming obscenities at people, like, for a while, and apparently attacked someone, I think, who she was with. And so the cops showed up and, like, arrested her, and there was, like, flashing blue lights in the middle of the campus. I was like, this is not quite what I was looking for. I was like, I felt like I was back downtown. I was like, I might as well be home,
right
next to a bar. So I didn't quite get, like, the wilderness experience I was looking for, but that's not what you get with car camping, I found.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, the people that are there are, have, like, coolers and stereos and children and dogs. So it's not the quietest situation.
Mm-hmm.
But I am planning a trip for later in October that I'm excited about. I'm going up to Mount Greylock with some friends.
Nice. And is that a bit more secluded?
That'll be a bit more secluded, yeah. The places we're looking to camp are further away from, like, are not car accessible, at least.
Got it.
Is a really good start.
Yeah.
That way, at least, if people are there, like, they can't, you know, they don't have a stereo.
Yeah, right. I haven't heard of the concept of hammock camping, like sleeping in a hammock.
Yeah.
But that sounds amazing.
it's really good. It's become, I feel like it's kind of, like, been rising in popularity and is cresting over into, like, fairly common these days.
Right.
It started off as this weird thing that only a handful of hardcore people did. Mm-hmm. But they have, like, it's, like, very much like a mass market thing now. You go to Amazon and buy a camping hammock and then just string it up between two trees, and it's great.
Nice. Yeah, I was going to ask. It's not the kind that has a stand or anything, right? So you're putting it between trees.
Exactly. Yeah. And the nice thing about that is, so the requirement, like, so in certain places, it doesn't make sense. Like, if you want to go camp at the top of a mountain where they're above tree line, like, you can't use this. So
sure.
It depends on where you like to go hiking and such.
Yeah.
But in New England, there are trees everywhere. Finding trees is not a problem. Mm-hmm. And the nice thing is, you're off the ground. So you're away from the bugs, and you're also away from a rough surface.
Right.
So you can hammock camp on a 15 degree incline. Mm-hmm. And be completely comfortable because it doesn't affect you.
Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, like, in a lot of places in New England, there are certain camps, like, established impacted campsites, because mm-hmm. everyone wants to find the same flat bit of ground.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you want to set up a tent, you got to set up your tent where everyone else sets up their tent. And so you can't get away from people so much. But if all you need is two trees, you can hike way off the trail and get somewhere really private and cozy and then set up and you're good.
Yeah. Huh. I'm going to have to keep that in mind if I do decide to go on any camping adventures myself.
Mm-hmm.
I think, like, my biggest blocker on doing it is just hearing the stories about sleeping on the ground and you got rocks on you. And it's like, sleep is such an important thing for me, like, and getting my pillow just right and all this stuff.
Totally.
So.
Yeah.
So
I brought a camping pillow. Didn't need it. Like, the edge of the hammock worked nice for just, it was, like, plenty of, like, head support.
Uh-huh.
It was great. I have a Grand Trunk double hammock, by the way, if you want a specific model recommendation. It's been great so far.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I'll make a note of that.
Yeah. And got a tarp. I didn't set up the tarp. Tarp is for if it's raining, basically, or if it's really windy, you can set that up to block some wind.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a beautiful night, and I was like, I'm not doing this. So I set it up to make sure I knew how.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I can do this. And then I just took it down. And it was wonderful, like, sleeping out, looking up. The moon was so bright, and mm-hmm. woke up, and the sunlight was, you know, on my face, and the birds were singing, and I was like, this is life.
Nice.
It's warm and cozy.
Ben goes and buys a cabin in the woods. I see that coming.
I need some sort of escape like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that like, full disconnect. Like, I try to get away from screens a decent amount when I'm not working and such, and I do a pretty mediocre job of it. I'm pretty addicted.
As we all do.
Yeah. And so, but like, the when I actually get really out into the woods and like I put the phone away or leave it in the car, and it's like, that's when I can really kind of get like a long extended period of uninterruption.
Yep.
And that's pretty magical.
Seems very healthy.
Yeah. It's almost like we were like meant to be in a situation kind of like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Cool. The only other thing I was going to ask you about is I saw you polling the audience about using Stripe subscriptions on Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
I was curious what that was
totally. So,
motivated by.
I've built a bunch of Rails apps that use Stripe for subscription billing.
Mm-hmm.
And I've rewritten sort of a similar amount of billing code over and over.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've gone back and fixed the bugs and then fixed the bugs and then fixed the bugs and then fixed the bugs. And we have like three separate implementations of this, even at just a Thoughtbot across right. our three products. And I was like, there's got to be a better way. So I was basically looking to see like how are other people doing this? What else is out there? Because we usually just do it by hand. So there interestingly are some open source gems that kind of provide that next layer. So Stripe gives you some sort of like, not fundamental, like building blocks, I guess,
uh-huh.
some pieces. And you're sort of most of the way there, but you still need to build a bunch of stuff on top of that. Like yeah. you need to store your own, like you need to store the fact that they have a subscription, and your system needs to know about it. You can't just offload everything to Stripe. And
sure.
so some people have written gems, and there are services also like Recurly that mm-hmm. take Stripe and then add another level on top of it. So like even with Stripe, you still need like, okay, I need an invoice.
Mm-hmm.
I want dunning. I need to handle a bunch of different things. So
sure.
Recurly kind of gives you that next level on top of that. But I was just poking around in here because this has been a pain point for me.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's got to be a pain point for other people. And so I've been talking to some folks about what they do and what their pains are.
Yeah. That's an interesting topic to dive into because I feel like the experience I had in building on top of Stripe subscriptions was pretty good, but there were edge cases and more and more. And like, I began to question, like, should I have just built a custom billing engine, which is what we did with Drip. And,
uh-huh.
It would be fun to talk about that sometime.
Actually, yeah, we should.
The inner workings. We could dive into that in a future episode, maybe.
Let's do that next time when we talk about yeah. your billing engine. I'm curious.
Yeah.
Because the edge cases thing has been my experience. So like mm-hmm. when I pull people on Twitter, everyone's like, yeah, I wrote the code once and it was great. It took me like a day. And I just know that person has not gone back and tried to A/B test different prices.
Right.
Or like had a situation where someone canceled and then signed up again and then converted into a team plan. And it's just like, there's just all these little things that I promise you, if you spend a day doing it, you did not handle these things.
Yep.
Like the
exactly.
bare bones start a subscription thing, that totally works. It's then all of the other like nasty things that can happen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's where the, I don't know. So there are people for whom this will never be like, if I made a thing like this, it wouldn't be like they would not be a good customer, but it would be
yeah.
the, like, okay, we're going to be a business for several years and we're going to move from where we have separate plans to a single price to metered pricing. Like, you know, real businesses where they really change stuff and you have hundreds of customers and things like that.
Yep.
That I still think there's like actually a legitimate pain point there.
Yeah, I agree.
I signed up for a demo from Recurly to see how they're tackling this.
Yeah, that'd be cool to hear about.
Yeah, it's fun to go through somebody else's sales process too.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, as I'm doing yeah. these outbound sales, I'm suddenly paying more attention. So I'm curious how they
yeah.
handle this.
Yeah.
But I put a note to talk about the billing engine next time.
Cool. Let's do it.
All right, man. Today's show is produced and edited by Tom Obarski. If you'd like to access the show notes for this episode, you can go to giantrobots.fm/212. Thanks for listening.